the next part is a little bit about governance, leadership, and management. And I'm not sure how your thinking is going in terms of how your PCNs will be governed and led and managed. There are three different models in the literature. One is networks can govern themselves. In that case, there's really no administrative entity at all. It's just all the partners kind of get together and figure out what they're doing. It seems a little loose, freewheeling and loose, which it probably is. It works better when there's just a few partners. Centralized decision-making is what happens. The advantage is that there's participation by all if it's self-governed. But the problem can often be, you know, how to reach consensus, and then if you can't, what do you do about that? And getting along in that case, which often doesn't work. The more common model might be a lead organization, where the biggest node, the most powerful node, the most important node, which is also a downside, takes it on because they have the resources to do that. This works better when there are many partners in the network. Decision making then becomes more centralized, though, because you have a lead organization doing it. It's more efficient. That's great. Things can work faster, go better, but, well, maybe not better, because the problem can arise that, hey, there's somebody else doing this and making our decisions, and because they're the biggest and best and have the most resources, are perhaps making decisions that are in their best interest, not the interest of the network. So there's also a downside to that model. Another model, and this may be more typical, I'm not sure if you considered any of these yet, but and there could be a hybrid as well of these, but is the network administrative organization, NAO, where it's actually a separate entity and not part of the network, but it's a separate entity to the network. It works best when there's many partners, when you want mixed decision making and involvement with all the partners through that entity. It's efficient and certainly more sustainable and more arm's length. But you can also get the problem of this looks more like a hierarchy and it costs a lot more money because you have to hire people to do this, both network managers or network leaders or network executive and assistants and have an office and all kinds of IT. So it's also a downside. And hybrid could be some combination of that. And then leadership and management. And they're actually quite different in the literature. Leadership is much more about mobilizing, enabling people, building relationships, and management is more about getting the things done through planning and directing, controlling and reporting, and those sort of day-to-day administrative, executive activities. But in networks, it's more important to think about leadership as complexity leadership. The health system, as I'm sure you all know, is in fact a complex adaptive system. It changes all the time. It has human beings in it, which in themselves were complex adaptive systems. But not everyone sees it that way. Some people see organizations as more like machines. They're predictable, they're mechanical. You press levers and things happen. Other people see them as places where there's different cultures. Other people see the system through a political lens. Other people see it as places of there's just lots of flux going on. So if we can agree on it, and it's actually important when you talk about networks to sort of agree on what lens are you coming to the network with? What is your conception of how things run here? So that the leadership can follow that kind of model. In that case, it's very highly context dependent, but the key to success there is that you enable things to be done. You can't direct them or control them in a complex adaptive system. In fact, systems you can't control at all. You simply can perturb them or disturb them. And networks are much like that in terms of how they function. The idea is to work through things together and not be directive, as you might be in a hierarchy where you have boxes and lines and hierarchy and power and control that allow you to do that. The transition here is from thinking vertically to thinking horizontally. Most of us haven't been trained that way. But I think we do need to spend a lot more time in training and development to think more horizontally, more laterally than vertically. And shift then from determining things in a more mechanistic, machine-like way in a hierarchy to enable things to get done through the work and collaboration of your network. Okay. Then there's distributed leadership. And this is also considered to be a fairly new way to lead, is that you distribute the leadership throughout the entire organization and not just one person at the top being the leader. The notion is that it's not by position or role at the top anymore. It's about let's do this together, and the leaders sort of enable this to happen throughout the organization. Interestingly, though, it's not new. It's been around for about 3,000 years. And Jethro, who's Moses' father-in-law, actually used the concept with the children of Israel when they left Egypt. Because they were all coming to Moses with all their problems, and he basically said, no, don't do that. You know, create groups in thousands and hundreds and fifties and tens and let them solve the problems. And just bring the high level, the important ones to you. And that's the notion behind distributed leadership. It gets done at the level of the issue and not everything having to elevate, because it creates such a burden on the director or the leader. And that's how network leadership actually needs to function. To consider the work through the relationship rather than at the top, and working through this at the individual level through the people who represent the organizations. The problem here, though, is that the concept of distributing leadership is important. Not everyone will get that you can't distribute power in the same way, because people tend to hang on to it once they have it. So it's another thing to be aware of. And then there's the problem with problems. We often characterize things that aren't going right as problems, but they don't really come that way. They don't come in packages that you can just solve. You know, here's a problem and solve it. They often come in very complex ways, and they're multidimensional and they're confusing. And all those ways have to be understood. And we don't do that. Very well. We treat them as problems, but when we try to fix them, it's called the Humpty Dumpty problem, we actually don't know what the solution looks like. So we struggle with that. So it's important to understand how we see the problem. And in fact, most problems are not problems. They are tensions and paradoxes. And you're going to find these in organizations, but you're going to find them in networks a lot as well. The most important ones are paradoxes. And when we reduce them to understand them and call them problems, that the way our mind works is that we tend to solve them. You solve problems, but you'll never solve a paradox. You can only manage the paradox or manage the tension. So it's kind of it's an interesting way to reframe this. David Bohm has done a lot of work in this area, that in our tendency to reduce things to parts, to understand them as problems, we tend to see the world as parts and fragments. And we are not very capable of putting them back together again, like Humpty Dumpty, to actually create the reality of the issue, which is much more than the problem we're trying to solve, which we never can. So it becomes a very interesting loop of going nowhere. That's one tension, one paradox. Another one is redundancy, and harkening back to the analogy and the reality of networks are abundant and living systems, we're often preoccupied with efficiency and getting rid of all the redundancy. And Lean was great at that, you know, getting rid of all redundancy and making things very efficient, very lean, and very cost effective. But networks want to work on more on the concept of redundancy, and because it's key to living systems, but because there's so much overlap in what we need to know, when you eliminate the things that you don't need to, you're putting the entire network at risk, sort of on the critical path of success for working as a whole. A third paradox can be the time cycle versus life cycle, and this is the issue of everything. Maybe not everything, but many things are pilot projects. And you don't know if you're going to be having sustainable funding to maintain it. Where you're working towards long timelines, you're also working towards short funding cycles. And that's one of the issues now with the BC Emergency Medicine Network. It's a 2-year pilot project, and there's a great uncertainty. Hopefully it will get funding to continue, but at this point, as I understand it, no guarantee. But it needs to work towards the longevity. And I think that was one of the interesting things that I think Prince George mentioned, that they didn't work towards the political 4-year cycle. Their vision was working towards a long-term sustainable primary care network, which is the correct thing to do. And I think part of what we'd call a positively deviant behavior that it's the right thing to do, but not everyone's doing it, but it works, and it should work. And then a fourth one is this idea about we're trained to work in organizations and hierarchies, and when we try to work in a network, it's more nebulous. Things aren't lined up in reporting relationships and boxes and lines vertically with power at the top and direction from the top. It's much more flat and nebulous and difficult to deal with and sometimes hard to understand. And one of the tensions is because people come and represent the organization, who, when push comes to shove, you have allegiance to your organization that you represent in the network and that the organization's interest or the interest of the network. And theoretically, because you're in the network, the interest of the network ought to be at the forefront. But in practical terms, that isn't often the case. So you can, there can be a lot of tension as a result of that. And as Millward put this, which is one of my colleagues in Arizona, is we're managing is more about the hierarchy. Managing a network relies on trust. So the equivalent in terms of managing in a network is using trust to do the work of that hierarchy and actually being more powerful. And then Millward as well has done a lot of work with networks, and I think he had a session with some networks in the U.S. about what he termed toxic nodes. Toxic nodes are, and maybe you recognize some of these behaviors in your own network, hopefully not. These toxic nodes are along the lines of free riders. They want everything, but they don't want to do anything. People who are just dead set on process, and you never seem to get anywhere. And this could be like your typical committee meeting in some cases. The double agent, indiscretion is the rule, and a lot of trading going on. People who, for whatever reason, sabotage things. It's not going their way. Kidnappers, they raise the ransom. I'll only participate if I get this. Some people like to start fires, and some people just like to start fires, fortunately. And then other people who are even worse, they just are destructive. And hopefully these people don't exist in your networks, but the thing is they can, and sometimes they do, and the thing is then what do you do about it? You have to deal with them. So that's another inherent tension where you're trying to bring people together in a positive way to collaborate, to move forward, but it's not always the right people that you have at the network. So you need to pay particular attention to who's there. And sometimes the people who are there are there representing the organization because they seem the most logical by their position, but in fact, they may be the wrong people. It could be the same organization, but an entirely different person with more of a network way of thinking and doing. So just a caution that it isn't just anybody who needs to be in the network representing an organization, but it needs to be the right person who is on board with the network and with what it's trying to accomplish. And that's not always the case, otherwise you can end up with issues like this. So the takeaway here is adopt a governance model that makes sense to you, that one that will work. Remember that leadership should be distributed. It just doesn't come from the top because there is no top in the network. And try to identify when you can the tensions and paradoxes in your network and address them head on, because you'll be far better off than letting them fester. So David May from Powell River, Dr. May has kindly agreed to, there he is over there, thank you, to provide some lived experience along these lines. So thank you, David.
Thanks, Ron. So I'm going to talk about the evolution of our board of Division of Family Practice. And most of you are familiar with the Societies Act, but for those of you who are not, Section 47, which is now in force, has stipulated that if you're a non-for-profit society, you can only pay the majority of your directors for their activities as a director. which put a huge kibosh on our board, because most of the people who were stepping forward to the board were also the doers and shakers in our community who were running projects. So there's various workarounds you can do in this, and I'm sure most of you have been involved in that. And I was ready to embrace this until my ED sat down with me, and he's quietly hunching in the corner over there. There's Guy, put your hand up there. Thank you. He's wondering what I'm going to say about him now, you see. I've got him in that position of power right now. And he sat down with me and said, you know, this is actually a huge opportunity. We can diversify our board. And so we discussed, well, if we're ever going to become one of these wave communities, what would we really want on our board, and how would we go about doing that? So we went to our community, looked at our community, and now on the board we have a PhD professor from UVic who works in the Department of Child and Youth Health, and we have a leader in the First Nations Health Authority. We have a woman who has just about run every not-for-profit in our town, and we also have the chief executive officer of the municipality on our board. So, you know, what's the risks of that? Because there's some inherent risks. As physicians, we talk about board diversity, and we talk about diversity as a whole, but we're actually a fairly homogenous group. You know, we've all had the same education. If I'm listening to a physician, I usually know what she's thinking. But taking that leap into the dark of getting different people on the board, the risk, of course, is, what if there's a difference between what your physician members are saying and what the board is thinking? So that goes back to Ron's previous point about making sure that you have nailed down your vision, your mission, and your values. And that was recently illustrated in our board discussions around a fairly contentious community issue, and you can come and talk to me about it later, where there was definitely some diverse views, and we were able to have some really constructive discussion and it was a much better in-depth discussion by having that diverse board than we would have done if we'd had a bunch of doctors sitting around there. So my job for the first year of this process was to ensure we had the right members on the board, ensure that they were compliant to the vision and the mission and the values. My job for this year is to really sit back and hand over the power on the board so that the board members can perform to the potential of their function, and I guess so that we can become a highly functional slime mold. So thanks very much.
Thank you, David. That's a great example, and good work and good luck there.